Talk with Maria Bailey. Join Maria as she takes on topics important to you. From the cradle to college, Maria and her expert guests offer information, tips, and tools to make the busy lives of families easier. Now, here's your host, Maria Bailey.
It is back to school season. We're in full swing. Have you bought your crayons and markers? Well, actually, if you're in the stores buying back to school, you may have already bought your Thanksgiving and Halloween costumes already, because can you believe it? I'm telling you, this is when you know that you have jumped from the summer right back into the busy season of the year, when everything that is offered to you is in pumpkin, like pumpkin candles, pumpkin coffee, pumpkin biscuits. Everything is pumpkin. That's your way of knowing that, hey, guess what, moms? We're going to jump right from that relaxing summer into back to school, into Halloween, and into Thanksgiving and the holidays. So here we are in the back to school and more season, and I'm happy that you have carved out some of your day to be with us. We hope at the end of this time that you're going to have a whole bunch of solutions. Maybe you've laughed a little bit, maybe you've cried, and maybe you have decided to follow us on Mom Talk Radio so that you can get more Mom Talk even after we're through. So as always, I want to thank our sponsor, Pre-Mama. Pre-Mama has, I've been talking about Pre-Mama for quite some time, because now when you're pregnant, you can actually drink your prenatal vitamins. But if you go into CVS stores nationwide, you'll find out that Pre-Mama now offers a Pre-Mama Fertility, Pre-Mama Lactation, and also their full line of Pre-Mama vitamins that have DHA and all of the nutrition that you and your child needs. And they care so much about moms that they actually bring you Mom Talk Radio here each week. So back to school stories. Anybody has got one? I know that I think every one of my friends has posted online a picture of their children going back to school. I still have one that hasn't gone back to school. And until that one goes back to school, I don't really know what my schedule is. So I'm a little off cue, because I've still got one child lingering behind. And it's those last days of summer where they get in trouble, right? Where they're so ultra bored that they just don't know what to do with themselves. But I know what we're going to do. We're going to take a short break. And when we return, we're going to chat with the co-author of Raising Can-Do Kids, Giving Kids the Tools to Thrive in a Fast-Changing World. Because after all, we want them this back-to-school season to be can-do kids.
Mom's Little Secret, Mom Talk Radio.
As we move our children from summer back into school, one of the things that I know a lot of you moms are looking to do is to create and raise that can-do child, the one who doesn't come in the door at the end of the day and says, oh, Mom, I just can't do this math. And we have just the author for you. He is the co-author of Raising Can-Do Kids, Giving Children the Tools to Thrive in a Fast-Changing World. He is Dr. Richard Rendy. He's a developmental psychologist, a researcher, educator, and he writes for Inside Parenting blog for Psychology Today. And we are delighted that he's here as we start this fast-paced move back into school to help us raise those can-do kids. So welcome, Richard, to Mom Talk Radio.
Thank you so much for having me.
So tell me about can-do kids. Isn't that like something that I guess parents have always wanted to do? What inspired you to write this type of book now?
I think, you know, it is something that parents have always wanted to do. And I think there's so many forces in our culture right now that affect parents that pull us away from that. What we mean by can-do kids is really giving kids all kinds of skills they're going to need throughout childhood, transitioning into adulthood. It's both the short-term and the long-term view. But I think the primary thing, and, you know, there's much buzz about this right now, you know, we're so focused on pushing kids towards success and making sure they're pushed hard in school and pushed hard in activities. And you know, those things can be important, but they have, you know, they're part of the picture. And I think the parenting culture that we're all exposed to is getting us away from all of the kinds of special things kids can learn at home from being with their parents and giving them the skills to be, you know, innovative and exploratory and curious and optimistic and just hard workers in the, you know, in the right way. And so much of that happens at home, and we want to help parents get back to recrafting their time with their kids and recrafting a bit how kids spend their time.
So let's talk about I always like to start with the parent. How do we recraft our time to do that? Because a lot of times parents don't think about changing their own behavior.
I think number one is, and this is a tough one, but it's something that I think we can all take on. We have to try to find ways that kids have more time with their parents. By more time, I mean giving up, if necessary, a structured activity here or there. The thing I hear from parents all the time, and, you know, and it's a cool thing about being a modern kid that you can do sports and music and dance, and, you know, as you get older, there's debate and there's all these other things. But as that piles up and as homework piles up, kids don't have a lot of time to just be hanging out in the house. And we even see this with very young kids, right? We see, to me, almost depressing declines in the amount of time that kids, young, very young kids have for free play, both within, say, a preschool setting and at home. And I think we have to remind ourselves how important that time is, not just as downtime, but really as critical developmental time. So number one is it's a hard sell, I think, in this culture, but to convince yourself that having your kids spending time at home, hanging out, doing stuff with you, doing things that they like to do, even doing things framed in a certain way, like chores, having time to talk to parents, just conversation. So many things, good things happen when kids and parents spend the time together, but we have to try to free ourselves a little bit from this notion that when you're doing that, that means your kid's falling behind. They're not falling behind. They're getting ahead when they do those things.
Yeah. Well, let's shift gears a little bit and talk about raising kids that have an entrepreneurial spirit about them, because we're hearing a lot about that entrepreneurial spirit. Maybe it's watching people who are entrepreneurs like Donald Trump. I don't know, but I'm hearing that a lot as it relates to kids. So why is that important?
Well, you know, we've kind of set up this situation where kids are, say, applying to college with, you know, amazing resumes. They already have resumes, right? They've done so many things. But so much of that time is programmed and structured. And we're also seeing when they get to college, well, lots of them are overwhelmed. Rates of depression are up. And what we think kids are lacking with all this chasing, you know, achievements, if you will, is that kind of internal spirit and spunk and sort of, you know, that drive that I'm going to go out and figure out what I'm going to do with myself. Especially, I think we're hearing about it because everybody's nervous about what's going to happen to our kids in the future. We don't know what kind of jobs they're going to have. You know, it's not the type of world where you go out and you're going to work in the same place for 40 years, you know, in most cases. We hear about kids who go to college and can't find jobs. So I think this all ties into the sense of being entrepreneurial, not so much that you're going to be an entrepreneur, but you're going to have these kinds of skills to navigate an unknown future. And that's really what entrepreneurs are really good at, right? They know how to navigate an unknown future, but they know how to tap into a lot of the skills they've cultivated, a lot of their passion. And we think kids need to have much, much more time to develop those sorts of things so they could really know how to take advantage of all their amazing opportunities and not just be, as some educators say, you know, robo-students. You know, you tell me what to do, I'm going to do it, I'll push hard. But left to my own devices, I don't have any fuel in the tank to just sort of explore what it is I'm going to do. What's going to make me unique out in the world? And again, that's kind of what we think of as an entrepreneur being good at.
Yeah, and you're right about that. I mean, kids, It's amazing to me the resumes that they have prior to going to college. I mean, by the time you are applying to colleges, you're just thinking, okay, how do you set yourself apart? And it is something that's very, very important. We just have a minute left. Where can people find your book, and who needs to read it? Is it just for the moms of the younger kids?
No. You know, it's we've deliberately wrote it so that it has streams of information and this kind of conversation and research and practical tips really for kids of, you know, any age. So parents, I think, would find valuable takeaways no matter what age their kids are. It's available on Amazon. It's available at various bookstores. Penguin Random House website has links to all of it. But really what we hope is that this is an inspiration for parents, and it gives them also some real platforming in terms of not just anecdotes but research-based advice to sort of take charge and help their kids develop these kinds of skills, which, you know, I think so many of us are in agreement, and they're not getting that. And parents
right.
are the best source, they're the best, you know, socialization tool for all of these kind of personal, social, cognitive sorts of skills.
Absolutely.
So we really hope it's helpful for parents, but particularly in this culture right now, give them a little bit of you know, sort of backing, and if you will,
great.
Even confidence to step away from the modern pressures and say,
well,
you know what?
It's a book that has a lot of really great suggestions in it, and we hope that our listeners will go out and pick up a copy. We have a link to Raising Can-Do Kids, Giving Children the Tools to Thrive in a Fast-Changing World. Thank you so much, Richard, for joining us, and good luck on the book because the content is really great. When we return, we're going to turn our attention to one mom who's doing pretty amazing things with her blog, and we're going to tell you what she focuses on. Turn today's spotlight on one mom who has teenage kids and blogs at DisneyGals.com. She's Ellen Cusick, and she loves her small home business and is doing quite well at it, I might add. And she's doing some pretty amazing things on her blog. So I want to welcome Ellen to Mom Talk Radio. Hey, Ellen.
Hi, everyone. How are you?
So I imagine with teenagers, you don't have to do too much back to school, or do you? Because that's always that weird age.
It is. I have a 16-year-old and a 17-year-old. They're both boys. And they are doing preseason soccer right now. So this is a, you know, time when they're really very busy. So they, you know, stop their summer jobs, and they fell right into their preseason soccer. So there is a little bit of preparation, but they go to a school where they wear uniforms, so there's no back-to-school shopping involved. I just go to landsend.com and order their uniforms, so that's pretty simple.
Well, it is, and I'm kind of in the same boat. Mine don't even have books anymore. They just have an iPad. They go pick it up, and there you have it. So
exactly.
Let's talk a little bit about your blog and your business. Tell me a little bit about it. I know your blog is Disney Gals, but what does your small business really encompass beyond that blog?
Well, my small business is Sea Glass Designs by Ellen. Mm-hmm. And what it basically is it takes my love of the beach and the ocean. I've grown up on the water my whole life, and I live about a mile from the Atlantic Ocean. So my daily walks, I've, you know, been searching for sea glass, and I thought of how can I take my love of creating things. I used to be a kindergarten teacher, and I retired a couple years ago, and turned it into something, you know, something for me, something a small business where it's not taking away the time from my children's soccer games or missing out on their life, but it gives me something to do and, you know, puts my creative juices, you know, flowing. So what I came up with was a bangle bracelet with a piece of sea glass and a charm. And usually that charm will represent different collections that I've come up with, like a under the sea collection, which will be seashells or seahorses. It could be a mermaid. And then I just started with a new collection called My Journey Collection, which is a collection that will be school colors. So for my children's high school, it would be their school colors, and a couple of the local high schools, I will be incorporating their mascot along with their school colors in sea glass and selling them in their school stores. So that's how I'm a little bit expanding.
That's so cool.
And yeah, then, it's exciting.
And then do you sell those online or what?
I do have a website at www.seaglassdesigns.com, but I also have two stores in town, a local surf shop and another small boutique shop. And my sister lives in Vero Beach, and she just asked me to send down a few pieces. There's a small boutique down there that would like to look at them. So I might be going out of New Jersey and into Florida, so it's pretty exciting to think that my designs might be, you know, making their way that way towards the south, where sea glass is a little bit harder to find than it is up here. So that's exciting, too.
That is very cool. So you just pull your inspirations, like, out of your mind and such, and create these beautiful things.
Absolutely. To be honest, I've always had that love for the ocean and creating. So when I stopped teaching kindergarten 2 years ago, I thought I needed to use those creative avenues that I always used in kindergarten, but do something that where it would be my own thing, my own home-based thing, where I could work on my time and I wouldn't be able to have to, you know, say, oh, I'm sorry, I can't get to your, you know, state game, or I can't get to your final game. I'll be able to juggle both, you know, both my children's lives and my life, and try to do that effectively.
Mm-hmm. Well, I want to remind everyone that your blog is DisneyGals.com. Lots of Disney information there. We have a link to it on Mom Talk Radio. And if you are interested in Ellen's jewelry and such, we have a link to her website as well. And you can follow her on Twitter at Cusack1967. There you'll find her and all things Ellen. And she's always on social media. So tweet her. I'm sure you'll get a tweet back. Thank you, Ellen, so much. And when we return, we're going to be speaking with the author of The Gift of Failure. Now, there's something that you don't hear of often as a benefit, but we're going to find out that there is something to be had about that.
You succeed at the most important career you'll ever have. Welcome to Mom Talk with Maria Bailey.
You know, often we have authors who focus on parenting and discipline, and our next author brings a different assortment type of books. She's authored many books. She's a professional artist, a cancer survivor, a retired clinical child psychologist, who believes strongly in the power of art in many forms to foster understanding. Her book, Daniel in His Starry Night Blanket, is a tale of a young boy as he's impacted by his sister's cancer journey. And we're joined today by Sally Lockridge, who we are delighted to have with us. So welcome, Sally.
Thank you. I'm delighted to be here and to be able to speak with you.
Tell us why you felt it was important to write your book.
As a child psychologist for so many years, almost 30, I learned a lot about the dynamics in families and how I might be seeing, say, a child who had a significant problem, whether it was illness or a behavioral problem, that all of the kids in the family are affected when one child is ill or challenged. And so that's something I've been aware of for many, many years. And after I had cancer, I started thinking about what it would be like, excuse me, to be the sibling, the young sibling of a child that had cancer. There's so much written for the kids that are ill, but there's less written for the healthy kids in a family.
And what impact have you seen that the healthy family members feel in a time like that?
Well, they can have a lot of strong feelings. A lot of the time they feel overlooked or abandoned because their parents are naturally giving a lot of attention to an ill child, trying to understand what's going on, get a diagnosis, sort out the treatment, and so forth. And they also may feel scared that they may even become ill or die. They can be angry at the sibling. They can be jealous of the sibling for getting so much attention, even getting to have stays on the pediatric unit at the hospital.
Does your book offer suggestions as well?
Yes, it does. It's a picture book, a story of one family, but in a lot of ways, it's a fairly typical family of the kinds of things that can happen when there's a younger sibling. I do provide at the back of the book a list of suggestions on how to use the book with children in therapy, or if the book is being discussed in a professionally led group. There are many, many ways to nurture the healthy young kids.
Where is the book being sold now?
Amazon. It's available on my website, sallylockridge.com, spelled L-O-U-G-H-R-I-D-G-E. It's also available on mainauthorspublishing.com and in area bookstores.
Are you hearing really good things, I imagine, from those families? Because it seems like such an important tool for a parent to have in a time when she probably doesn't have a lot of time to think about other children who
are
in the family.
Parents can be overwhelmed by new language, their own fears, their own emotions, the needs of the ill child. And so to juggle the needs of all of the kids in that challenging time is particularly hard. So, yes, this is one resource for those kids with ideas for the parents about how to provide some predictability and structure for the family in this kind of a new normal, if you will, how to be honest and empathic to the kids, how to continue, find new ways perhaps to express connection and affection for the children, even if they have to be away, say, in another city to be with the child who's being treated.
Right, right. Well, it's really great information. It's an important book, and we are so glad that you took some of your time to share it with us today. Thank you so much, Sally, for joining us. And we have a link to Daniel and his Starry Night blanket on Mom Talk Radio. Thank you so much for being with us. And, you know, as we're preparing for the back-to-school season, there's a couple of tips then and tricks that I use throughout the years that I wanted to share with you as we're going into it. So making lunches, right? None of us really enjoy making lunches, or maybe you're that rare mom who does. One of the things that I always did was on Sundays, I would actually package everything that was non-perishable for the entire week. So when I went grocery shopping on the weekends, most of my time it was on Sundays, I would literally take the bag of chips or the bag of whatever cookies or whatever healthy thing that I was finding for my children. And because I had four kids, I would literally take brown paper bags and line them on the counter with the kid's name and the day of the week. And I would put whatever was non-perishable. So instead of having the apples in a bowl on the counter, I would put them into the bag. And I would have 16 bags or 20 bags on the counter. And I would vary what went in each bag for each day of the week. And I put them away in the cabinet. And so every day when I made lunch during the week, all I had to do was add the drink and the sandwich and put it into the refrigerator. It saved me so much time during the week because I only had to take out the Ziploc bags and the containers one time, and I was able to save myself time throughout the week. When we return, we're going to be talking with Jessica Leahy. She's the author of The Gift of Failure.
The number one podcast for busy moms, Mom Talk Radio.
The gift of failure. Some of us would argue that it's not really a gift, but hasn't your mom ever said that when one door closes, another one opens? We're here today with author Jessica Leahy. She's an educator, a speaker, and a writer. She has been a teacher in many subjects over the decade, and she writes the biweekly Parent-Teacher Conference advice column for the New York Times. She's a contributor to Atlantic, and she's also on radio in Vermont. I am delighted to have her here with us to talk a little bit about the gift of failure. So welcome, Jessica, to Mom Talk Radio.
Thanks so much for having me.
So first of all, tell me a little bit about the book, The Gift of Failure.
Sure. I wrote an article for The Atlantic 2 years ago, almost 3 years ago now, called Why Parents Need to Let Their Children Fail. And it just went a little bit crazy. And I had been looking into sort of trying to figure out why my students were getting so nervous about rough drafts and getting anything wrong and raising their hand when they weren't entirely sure of the answer. And I was really tempted to blame the parents of my students for this, but at the same time, I had a middle school student, and I realized if they were complicit, then I was complicit too. So this sort of became about not just my students and not just my own children, but how teachers and parents are sort of both feeding into this, this incredible worry about being wrong, about not being perfect all the time, which makes it really hard to teach kids.
You're right. And you know what? It's funny that I'm listening to you talk about that, like, you know, the fear of failing even on a rough draft. And I actually am in school for my MBA. And I got to tell you, my classmates who are 35 and 40 years old, they freak out over the rough draft. And Sometimes I'm just sitting there going, it's a rough draft. That's why they call it a rough draft, right? You know?
Well, where I saw it really happening was when kids are really stuck, sometimes I'll ask them to do free writes where they just put their pen to paper and they just write. They just allow it to come out of the pen. They're not allowed to take the pen off the paper. And students were just incapable of doing this. It was just too hard. They were too worried someone was going to see it. And writers talk about the need for these terrible, terrible first drafts so that you can get the bad stuff out. And if kids aren't allowing themselves to get that bad stuff out so you can find, you know, the one promising idea and all that bad stuff, you know, writing class became a nightmare. Latin class wasn't working so well either. And English class certainly wasn't working because, you know, I need kids to put themselves out there a little bit to find the good ideas in the bad ones.
Right. Well, let's tap into your expertise and your experience as a teacher and talk a little bit about some of the things that we are about to face as we send our kids back to school. The dreaded homework.
Mm-hmm.
How do we help without taking over?
Well, for all of the questions you're going to ask me, I think the background idea is two things. Try to focus on the process as opposed to the product. Try to think more about how we get there and what we're learning during the process, what the students are learning during the process, rather than where we're going to end up and what that grade or what that score or what that final result is going to be. And the other thing is that every single time we feel really tempted to step in and make things easier for our kids and save them from themselves is to think about what our long-term goals are. Are our long-term goals, you know, for our kids to feel safe and warm and happy in this moment? Or do we want them to get to a point where they feel confident enough to work through issues by themselves? So where homework is concerned, I think the best thing you can do is remove yourself from the room. Say, I'm going to be in the kitchen chopping vegetables, you know, getting those dinners you were just talking about, getting those ready for later on in the week. But at the same time, work on it yourself, and if you really, really need me, if you get really stuck, I'm here for you. But I really want you to give it your best shot by yourself first. Removing yourself from the situation helps because it gives you a little distance, and it lets your kids see that you have other things to do, and that's really important for them to see, I think.
Yes, absolutely. So quickly, how do we change the focus from perfection with grades and aim for actual learning?
Yeah, again, it's stepping back and thinking long term instead of short term. I mean, we've gotten so focused on you know, what you're going to get on tomorrow's homework assignment that we've kind of forgotten that the whole point is supposed to be to learn the material. And leaving questions blank, saying to your teacher, you know, I tried really hard at this one and just couldn't figure it out on my own. Can you help me? Is so important. And when parents step in and give kids the answers or help get them there, maybe through reasoning that the kids aren't really understanding because it's different from what their teachers are teaching them, that doesn't help the teacher help the kid. So going to school with the perfect homework assignment may look great and may make you feel really good and may make the kid feel really good, but it definitely doesn't help the teacher understand what the kid is having problems with.
Yeah, but then how do you, we only have 2 minutes, and I don't know if this is a short answer, but how do you balance that with the fact that every single thing is scored when you go to school? So, you know, if you're trying to compete to get into, I don't know, a good mm-hmm. high school or a good middle school, some parents just think, you know, I don't have one grade to blow when it comes to my kid because they've got to go to this college or this school or whatever. So how do you balance that?
I mean, the best way to do that for me is if you decide that you really do want to be able to step back and you really do want your kid to get the benefit of a little bit of autonomy so they can take some ownership of their work and of their learning, is to get the teacher on board with you. Say, you know, I think I've been doing too much for my kid. I really need your help. I want to give my kid more room to make mistakes so that you can help teach my student better. Oh my gosh, teachers have so much respect for that, and it puts you back on the same team together. And in the long run, I promise you, this is going to do a lot of things. Not only is it going to help your kid learn better, and it's going to make the teacher really feel like you're on the same team together, but that teacher is going to have a lot more positive stuff to say about your kid over the long term. The best letters of recommendation I've ever written for students have been students who had hiccups along the way. The letters that I write about the kid who got 100% every single time and that's sort of just what I came to expect from them, those letters are pretty boring. And secondary schools and colleges, they aren't really particularly that interested in those letters.
Right. Well, really great stuff. And you have a website, jessicalahey.com. We've got a link to it on Mom Talk Radio. You have so much wealth of information. I'm going to encourage all of our listeners to go and check it out. Thank you so much for joining us as we head back to school, Jessica. You've been a delight. When we return, we have the CEO of an entertainment company who's doing pretty amazing things that can benefit your children. Excited about our next guest. She's done a lot with a lot of really great young vocalists over the last 24 years. Her name is Linda Septien, and she is the CEO of Septien Entertainment. They have a studio and training programs in Dallas and LA. She's produced some incredible artists, and she's here to talk to us a little bit about music and playing an instrument and singing and what that can do for your children. So welcome, Linda, to Mom Talk Radio.
Thank you so much for letting me be on. And you're asking me my favorite subject, so I'm all excited.
Confession here. I'm one of those parents that I have four children. Three of them were like the academic type. And then came this dramatic youngest child that does nothing but sing and dance, and she would much rather be on a stage performing. So when we discover a child like that, what do we do with her?
Well, first of all, is she not equally or much more smart than the rest?
She is. Her talents are in different places. Let's say it that way.
Okay.
And she is as smart. She's just smarter in different areas. You know how to sit down and study with a child. I can't even read music. That's my point. It's not what we, I think, naturally learn how to foster.
Right. Well, I always know when someone's an entertainment kid, right? Because when they come into my offices, they immediately say, "Linda, can I perform for you?" You know, and I'm like, "Whoa!" And they're like 4 years old, and so it's funny. And then I can't, of course, get them to stop, and so I start laughing because that's just an entertainer's personality. I mean, they're obviously the studies, you know, probably some of them, but they are very right-brained humans, and so we have to accommodate their method of learning. And I think that's probably how we got on the talent code and all of those things, because we examine how each child or each adult, we teach adults too, but how they learn. And then we go after that, right? We go after, well, this is, we got them. Because I'm better off teaching an ADHD or ADD child than I am a child that is very calm, because I can get more of an artist heart out of them, and their fans will engage faster. So we look for that. Although we do have, you know, children who are very, very disciplined, that we teach then how to be on stage, how to engage their audiences.
I'll be honest with you. I'm never one of those people that says my child has talent or doesn't. So if you do have a child that comes to you and says, "Okay, Mom, this is what I want to do. I want to sing for a living." How do you even know if they have talent? And what do you do from that point on to help them grow?
We believe talent is grown, not born. And it is, because talent is so tough. When you learn anything from tennis on, you learn it by replication. And of course, our mantra is practice makes permanent. And you have to make those mistakes in order for your brain to trigger what is correct also. And if you keep saying, "Whoops, that didn't work," and then you go back to, "Let's try this," and you keep doing it till sufficient myelin has encapsulated all the neural endings, then you can, it will lock in that 10,000 hours that we talk about all the time. And so that's how our entire programs are done. So back to your question, how do we know if they're talented? We don't. We have to work with them, because talent is a multiple of thoughts, ideas, impressions of the brain, how the child was raised, if it's from a stressful home or non-stressful, because that causes a lot of situations that we have to work with. And a lot of our talented kids sometimes do come from different facts of life, different backgrounds, different social things. I mean, it's tough.
Where,
but you know what? When we find out that that they're talented, is that you keep working with them and they have this drive, like you're talking about your daughter.
Right.
They have a drive that you can't even imagine.
You have so many resources and so many offerings. Where can our moms go to find out more about what you're doing?
The SEPTN group.com, or they can just look up my name and the SEPTN and it will come up on, you know, a lot of different blogs and different things. That'd be great.
SEPTIEN. For those of you who are interested, check out the website. I've been to it. Great resources. And thank you, Linda, so much for being with us. And thank you for being with us as we go into the back to school season. We're going to try to give you as many survival tips as we can. And the first one is to go to Twitter and tweet me your questions, and we'll provide you the facts and the tips that are relevant to you. Thanks, everyone, for keeping me on the air for 20 years. And we're into the 21st back to school season as Mom Talk Radio says goodbye for this week, and we'll talk to you soon.